and welcome to episode 97 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about all types of topics in tabletop gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today we're talking about asymmetrical games. These are the games where each player takes a role that is a little, and sometimes a lot, different than everyone else. This could be as simple as a special action specific to each player, or something far more elaborate, such as completely different win conditions. We'll talk about all of this. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, and the SGC. And thank you to our newest patrons, Wesley Taylor and Tim Vernig. Also, a thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Thank you very much. I think it might be trailer, but I could be accidentally putting an R in there. I don't know, for Wesley.
Oh, I also might not be able to read. Sorry, Wesley. It's been a long day.
Welcome to the team, Wesley, regardless of what your name is, and Tim. Thank you both. And thank you for everyone. Like, we have so many awesome friends and patrons, and I got to meet a bunch of them last week at Origins. And yeah, we just have awesome listeners. That's what I've decided.
They're pretty great.
Let's see. Speaking of Origins and other cons, I'm in this state where this year I'm going to a con a month, but this is really like, yeah, this is like the really the big season. So let's see. June was Origins. July is Dice Tower Con. So July 4th through the 8th, and that's in Orlando. So if you're around, let me know. Gen Con is I don't put the dates in here for Gen Con, but it's the Gen Con weekend, which I think is the first weekend of August.
It is. Friday is the 3rd. So it's probably the 2nd through the 5th?
That sounds perfect. And if not, then check your calendar. But we do have a live show that Friday of Gen Con at 5 o'clock. So join us at that live show. And maybe afterwards we can catch a game with anyone who wants to stay around and play games. Let's see. We have some. Oh, so I mentioned that I don't play a lot of place things for point games, because there's a handful of games out there right now that are really big. So Azul, Sagrada, and Reef is the newest one. So I have a few people, Christy, Ann, and Chris, all offer to teach me or play these games with me at Gen Con. So if that's Friday, Kitty, maybe you can join us with these things.
Maybe.
So I'm looking forward to that. Like I said, these aren't necessarily games I run out and pick up, but I usually enjoy them when I'm playing them. So I need to get on that. That's the next thing is Seventh Continent. We mentioned that the Seventh Continent Pledge Manager is reopening for additional pledges. However, in saying that, I've gotten a flurry of emails and questions saying, wait a minute, I don't know where this link is. I can't get to it. So I'm like, well, I should probably track down the link before just taking people's word for it. So after a little research, they are opening it. It's going to be open in July. So they just say July. And don't fret if you haven't missed anything yet. And as soon as we have a link, we'll post it in the show notes. But if you go to their Kickstarter page, their most recent comment or update actually gives all the story to it. So you can check there if you want more details. But it is coming, and it is open to everybody, not just the people who backed, according to their Kickstarter update.
And that link is in the show notes for this episode.
Yes. We will put the link to the Kickstarter update in the show notes. And as soon as there's actually a Pledge Manager link, I'll post that as well.
Excellent.
Yeah. I highly recommend that if you like adventure story games, this is one you should look into, since it's the only way you can get it. And it is really, really good. All right. We have a winner for our June giveaway.
Ooh.
I know. Well, I guess it's June 26th right now, so that's pretty much the full month of June.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next giveaway is going to be a little short, because it's going to end on episode 100, which is only 4 episodes away, but we'll get to that. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. So our winner is Ashton Jensk. Is that right?
You think Jenks. So?
Jenks. Jenks. You can't read the last names today, so you don't know. So, Ashton, if I'm murdering your name, you know who you are. I don't have your address. So just shoot me an email, send me your address, and that you're like, oh my God, I won. This is amazing. That's usually what I expect in all emails any email that's sent really is like some kind of screaming emojis. So, and if you don't email me within the week, I will email you. But the sooner you email me, the sooner I am likely to put things in a box and send them your way. So thanks everybody for entering our June giveaway. We had a ton of entries and I had a little Easter egg for bonus entries, and I had a lot more people find that Easter egg than I thought. But did you find that Easter egg?
I don't know if I did, but I don't think I finished the Origins episode.
It wasn't.
In that one. Then I missed it.
It wasn't a spoken Easter egg. So that's the only clue I'm giving. So
I totally missed it.
So our next giveaway, I am calling this the episode 100 giveaway. I don't know if I'm actually going to do a July giveaway on top of that. I probably will. So we may have a couple things giving away in the near future. But the episode 100 giveaway is going to be a little different for a number of reasons. Number one, I want to make it available to everybody. And so that what I'm going to do there is you're going to get a $100 gift card to either Amazon or Cool Stuff Inc. You get to decide. And the first place, the grand prize winner will get that. And I'm going to have four winners that will get $25 each at one of those that you decide. But there's a catch to this one. You have to go and fill out our survey. So I figured out SurveyMonkey. I put a 10-question survey together. It's super easy. SurveyMonkey says it'll take 4 minutes. It also tells me that approximately 74% of the people who go to it will fill it out. I want to get that to 100%. They have all these stats and stuff, and you can pay for all kinds of extra stuff. I didn't pay for anything. So the survey will be anonymous. I don't really care what your answers are. Try to make them as useful for us as you can. But if you want to enter the contest, you will need to put your name and email address in there just so that I have a way of drawing somebody. So the way that SurveyMonkey works is I can take any question and just get all of the answers for it. So I'm going to take all of the answers for the email address and name, and then that will be the drawing thing. And then all the other stuff is just aggregated together. So I'm not trying to tie you to your answers or anything like that.
Yeah, we won't be hunting people down and yelling at them for being too mean.
Nope. and most it's 8 multiple choice questions and 1 freeform question. So it's super, super easy. Just similar, basically things that will help us decide what's important for the show going forward. And there's one question in there that is, what is your favorite combination of hosts? And I think I know the answer to that one, which is going to be all three of you. So we're doing what we can. So we will look into ways of making this happen once Kitty is currently packing for her move. Actually, Josh is packing.
Sitting here in a sea of boxes right now.
Yeah. And Josh is packing too. He sent me a video the other day saying, hey, can you come over and just pack up my house for me? And I'm like, no, I won't. Because I will never move again, ever.
Yeah.
And one more thing. If we get over 100 responses to this survey, then I will throw in a second grand prize winner. So you will have 2 $100 winners and 4 $25 winners. So I'm really trying to bribe people because I want to get as many people as we can to answer these silly questions just so I can get a nice good average. So that's our 100th episode information. I think that's all the info. You have to enter through the survey. The survey link will be in the show notes. So just scroll down and take a look at the show notes. And if you're not sure what that is, just go to tabletopgametalk.com. It will be in all of the episodes that are posted between now and the drawing. So it's just the front page that you're looking at. You can see it there. All right. Feedback. We don't actually have a lot of feedback this week because we did our Origins episode last week and we didn't get much feedback on Origins. A few questions here and there. There's a really good thread going on Board Game Geek about, you know, what did you miss out on at Origins and those types of things. So if you want to follow that, go to tabletopgametalk.com/BGG and you can find that thread there. Anne did ask. Anne is, we hung out with Anne a little bit during Origins and we hung out in the social deduction room. So she did ask, is the social deduction area at Gen Con, does it require like prepaying tickets? And no, it does not. You can get a ribbon there just like you can at Origins. I think it's $10 or $20 it's one of those. I don't remember exactly how much. But at Gen Con, the social deduction room is actually just in a huge hallway. So you can't miss it. Just walk around after 10 o'clock and listen where all the people are laughing and accusing each other. All right. On that note, we have a really... This topic is going to take a long time. It is meaty. I didn't realize how meaty until I started going. There was a lot of input into this one. So we are just going to segue directly to On Topic, which may be a record. I say that every time I'm under 15 minutes, but it still might be a record. All right. So cue the music and...
In this episode, we're talking about asymmetrical games, those games that have each player start from a different position and may even have different victory conditions. How are these games different from your typical game? We'll find out.
Yeah, I guess that kind of answers its own question. And maybe we're done now, right? Shortest episode ever?
Done.
Yeah, wrapped. So this one, the suggestion from Adam Harrison, he actually sent me three great suggestions. The first one was like two-player dueling games, and this is the second one. And the third one will come up at a future episode. So he put a comment on BGG, and I like his too long didn't read summary. For the longest time, I did not know what TLDR meant.
You have to Google these things.
I asked someone at work because apparently it's like an email thing now. You just put it at the very top of your emails.
Really?
And then you ramble on at the bottom of it. And I'm like, what is all this TL semicolon DR? Why? And like, too long didn't read and with a really weird look. And I'm like, oh, never mind. Okay, I'll carry on now. But anyway.
Yeah. I think it means you don't hang out in the comment sections enough.
I try to really not hang out in any comment sections ever.
It's a good idea.
it can ruin your mood in a lot of ways. So he says, asymmetric games add another layer of strategy that can make the game much more interesting, especially for repeated plays. The additional complexity and balance considerations, however, can hurt the game if not handled well. And I think that sums up really, really well what an asymmetrical, like the kind of like the pitfalls to it. But let's get into what an asymmetrical game really is, at least how we're going to be defining it. Do you want to take a shot at this?
So when I think of an asymmetrical game, I think of a game where each player has a different setup is my typical definition.
Yep.
But it looks like you've gone into some other definitions here. So it can be a very wobbly term. Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing, because you can kind of look at this a number of ways. And there was a few comments that made me think of that people thought were asymmetrical games that I would have never considered such. So I think starting with a different setup is actually a really good starting definition.
Yeah.
And then I put on here, is Risk an asymmetrical game? And I don't think Risk is an asymmetrical game. Because you are starting, like, once the game begins, you start placing things. But in my mind, the game has already begun at that point.
It depends on which Risk setup you're doing.
No.
You can either pick countries where each player places one troop in a country at a time. You each have turns. Or you can deal the cards. Have you ever played this way?
No, but I'm assuming the cards have the territories on there, so you're...
Each card has a territory, you deal out the cards, and that is the starting map. And that, I would say, does count to me as an asymmetric game, because you are not making the choice, you are being dealt the hand.
Yes, I would agree as well. In that particular case, the setup is being given to you, and you're playing with what you have. Now, it is about the loosest form of an asymmetrical. So we're not going to go too deep into it. But what we're looking at really is the asymmetrical games where, you know, looking at Scythe, most people have at least heard of Scythe. Scythe has a faction board, and you can have one of seven factions, I believe. And then there might be seven or eight, but don't fact check me on that. You can have more than...
There's definitely seven.
Yeah, you can have at least seven different factions. But you also have a player board that goes along with that, and those are also all different. So you can have a combination of that, and say it's seven, so you have 49 different possible combinations that you can start with in Scythe. Not only that, your position on the map is going to be different, and the surrounding territories around that position will be set up a little bit differently as well. So your special abilities... Well, in Scythe, it's more like the cost of different things. And then as you're building up with the factions, you're unlocking special abilities that only your faction has. There might be a few shared here and there. But ultimately, you have your own unique set up a powers, abilities, and costs. This is what I'm thinking of as an asymmetric game, or more in that range.
Cry Havoc is my go-to asymmetric game. That is, when I think an asymmetric game, I think Cry Havoc. The races are completely different. Your strategy is completely based on your race. If you are not playing your race well, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
And you can't play the same way. Like, if you move a seat to the left, you've got to completely change the way you play the game.
Yep. Now, Cry Havoc does have set rules. It's just each faction, their abilities are going to cater to a particular play style. And I think that that is one of the advantages of asymmetric games, is that you can play a race or whatever side that kind of matches your play style. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But in Cry Havoc, you have the person that is very warlike, so they want to attack all the time. You have the group that just wants to spread out and control as many territories as possible. You have the group that just wants to mine as much as possible, just keep on collecting. And then you have, if you're playing four players, the group that's like the defending group, and you know, and they're wanting to push off. And you're right, if you try to be a defensive with the offensive team, you're not going to win. It just isn't going to work. Cry Havoc gets dinged for being very, very, it feels like it's very unbalanced because some factions are just easier to win with than others. But the designer has said, once you know the factions are really balanced, some factions are harder to win with than others.
I think it's more that some factions are harder to learn than others.
That is, yeah.
Because the human faction is very straightforward. It's really easy to learn, and I've seen yellow win a lot in first games. But then when you see other games played, maybe I haven't seen red win as much, but blue, once players figure it out, that's the one where I've seen it go like either you win or you lose if you're blue.
Yeah, blue is the one that's tricky, because if you want to be like, it feels like I should expand out and get more territories, or it feels like I should be attacking or defending, and blue is just all about turtling up and collecting crystals.
Yeah, and then you like pull a trigger and all of a sudden you've won. That's how it felt like to me when you played, and it's an interesting dynamic that it brings to the game.
Yep. Now, I haven't played personally with four players. I've taught a game and had someone else play four players, but when apparently the green, which is like the little troglodytes or trogdites or whatever the name of them are, when they're playing, that one is the easiest to win with because you're just kind of defending. But again, I think it really depends on how well you know the game. And no matter what you play, it still feels fun to me. I want to play that game again because I want to try this position. Or I really want to play again until I can win with the blue faction. And I'm just going to keep doing that over and over and over.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of games we're talking about. I think there's another type of game that is a little bit, well, I guess they're kind of two types of games that are not quite as asymmetric as Scythe and Cry Havoc. You have your Terraforming Mars kind of games, where at the beginning, you are dealt in Terraforming Mars, you're dealt a corporation card. And that corporation is going to set you up with your starting resources and possibly give you some kind of easier goal to go towards, like an ability that allows you to do something easier. I still think of this as an asymmetric game, but it's far lighter. And because it is such a, it's just a quick one-off. It's like a single card and everything else is built from these other cards as you're playing. It's not as asymmetrical, but I still think of it as it is asymmetrical. What do you think of that? Like, does that, the corporations there, does that really influence how you play enough? Or do you even think of Terraforming Mars as an asymmetric game at all?
I don't, because the only times I have played, I'm playing with new players and we have played with the basic corporation. Everyone starts with the same.
Yep.
So I've never even really explored that part of the game. So I don't know how much it would add or detract to it for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It allows you to be a little bit more flexible, or it sort of encourages you to take a different strategy. But for me, for Terraforming Mars, it's all of the other cards that are really going to dictate that strategy, what I'm drafting from those other sets. So it's a hard one for me. It's a tricky one. However, if we look at something like, I'm going to go with Rising Sun, which I don't think you've played, right?
I have not.
So
I've heard you talk about it enough.
Enough, right. So Rising Sun has, there's seven different factions, and this one is definitely seven different factions, although one of them is a Kickstarter exclusive. So I guess there's six different factions for those people who, wait a minute, there might be eight factions. Darn it. I don't know. But there's a number of different
factions. Goodness.
There's a number of different factions. And each faction has a single rule-breaking power to it. Cosmic Encounter is very similar to that too. So you get this faction, everyone's playing by the same rules, but you have a single faction that has like what looks like a game-breaking rule. And you just, that is how you play the game. So in Rising Sun, one of them, no matter what you buy, it never costs you more than one coin. And if you have a discount, it can be zero coins. There's one where normally your strongholds can't move, but for that faction, your strongholds can move and they can also fight. You know, so all of these that seem very drastic, but each one of them has their own thing that makes it seem like, man, I'm so overpowered, I'm going to take over the game. But since everyone has a power like that, it still feels balanced. The other thing with this one, though, and Cosmic Encounter, I'm going to just put these two into the same asymmetric category. The balance there doesn't matter as much by power, because you have people to help with the balance. And I think that this is a key thing with asymmetric games, is we talk about balance all the time, but if you have a social, well, if you have a negotiation game, balance doesn't quite matter as much because the negotiations will make up for it. So you can have the best power in Cosmic Encounter, but if you can't get anyone on your side because you're too powerful, it doesn't matter that you have the best power.
This actually reminds me of Tournament at Camelot.
An asymmetric trick-taking game.
Asymmetric trick-taking game. Each player has a character that they're playing as where it has the same kind of rule-breaking ability, but yep. Each character has their own. The problem I find with that one sometimes is that a little bit like Cry Havoc, some of the characters are a lot easier to pick up on than others. And it makes it feel like they're overpowered if you're playing with one of the trickier characters. But once you figure out those trickier characters, you can really pick up the difference.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel as different.
And that's really what gets you back to the idea that there's a lot of replayability in these games, because you want to try to master each of the different like starting scenarios that you could be in. Todd from BGG, he brings up this point on balance. He's like, I feel balance is the biggest drawback for asymmetry. It's a lot harder to balance a game when everyone can do different things. I'm sure most designers do due diligence and massive playtests to get their things right, but it seems like every game gets comments like faction A is too weak, faction B is overpowered. Sometimes it's comically funny when two different groups have different group think and flip A and B on what they think is too weak and too powerful. I definitely think that this is, balance can be a problem, but I think his last point here is actually more interesting.
It's a great point.
Because when you think about it, play style of groups tends to develop as you keep playing with the same people. And let's go back to the Cry Havoc example. Let's just say that, you know, no matter what, the Terrans or whatever the Red Faction is, they're always winning, because the best way to win that game is just to spread out and dominate, and then therefore you're going to get the most points. In that group where they think that that is the best way to play, anyone who's playing blue is going to be trying to do that same strategy, and they're going to fail miserably, because that's not what the group think is. The group think is military, military, military. I think that this can happen in a lot of different games where it's like, man, that's so strong. Codex is a great example. In Codex, which is a super asymmetrical, because it's basically a trading card game without all the trading.
Without the trading, things. Yeah.
But the factions are very, very different from each other. So if I'm playing purple and you're playing red in Codex, I feel like my faction is very underpowered, because red is very fast, it's very brutal, it can kill you no problem, and purple is very technical, it's time-oriented, it's planning and strategy. I have yet to win with purple. But I keep wanting to play with it so that I can finally win with it. But I think what it is I'm trying to play it the wrong way, or at least I feel like I'm playing it the wrong way, because a ton of people are like, purple's so powerful. I'm like, really? Tell me how.
I was going to say, there's a lot of buzz about purple being like overpowered, according to some people. You just have to figure out the strategy.
Yeah. So I think that when, again, it's that whole with balance thing, you know, do the designers play test it massively? Sometimes they, you know, they're trying to balance it as much as they can. But ultimately, when you have a ton of different factions, there's only so much you can do. And that's where I think tricks start to come in, where you give a little bit more control to the players to kind of customize their side. So players can try to break things. And then it's, you know, it's the meta, as they call it, that's broken. You know, oh, purple is the most powerful faction. If you pair it with this hero from the red faction, and with those, that two combinations, you can't be beat. And then you have this race against, you know, someone else is like, oh, but if I use the green faction and the white faction, I combine them like this, then I can beat that purple red combination every single time. So you still get to have that back and forth of like battle between just like balancing it yourself.
It brings almost a puzzly aspect to it, where it's not just during the gameplay. It's something you think about later. It's something you consider, and it does increase the replayability, I think, because you want to try again. At least that's how I always feel. It's like, did I do this wrong? What can I do different? I want to try again. And I think I get caught up sometimes playing the same race over and over again because I want to get it right. And then I may not explore some of the other aspects of the game because I'm caught up on, I have to make it work.
Well, I'm not sure that's a bad thing, though, because personally, I rarely want to play the same faction twice. I want to try something different every time, where like you or Sydney will want to like master a particular race. You know, I want to make this work. I want to figure out like all the nuances of this. I think asymmetrical games are a great way of bringing the cult of the new and the cult of the old together.
Maybe.
I can play something different every single time, but the other person can play the same thing every single time. And so I can play this game multiple times. Well, you get to play this game over and over and over, and I don't get bored. You don't get bored. Eventually, we're going to run out of, you know, factions and races to try, but it keeps my interest longer.
There's still the combination too, though. It's not just if you're playing a game that has seven factions with three players. There's so many combinations there of different ones you can bring in. So even if one person is always playing the same one over and over, this is my favorite, I'm not going to change, I'm always purple, I love it. Everyone else changing still makes the game feel different, and it challenges them, even though they feel like they know that faction so well, they can still seem like completely different by what's coming at them.
Yeah. Well, and if somebody knows, like, I know you've mastered a particular faction and you're really good at this. If I'm playing with a couple other people and we both know you're great at this faction, we're trying something new, we're going to be a little bit more attentive to what you're doing.
Maybe a little bit teamy uppy.
Maybe.
As well.
Because you have you've mastered this faction. So
it's an advantage.
Yeah. It's not about winning the game. It's about beating you in those, you know, we've talked that way.
Yeah. Especially when a faction really matches with your playstyle, when you feel like it's almost like a kinship with the faction. You're like, yes, this belongs to me. It's like an ownership. I am the red team and I will destroy all. It really can make you more engaged with the game.
Yeah. Well, and I think that is something that is actually kind of cool in a lot of different things. So Talisman, just picking another asymmetric game off the top of my head. Now, this one is interesting because this one, you're starting with a different role-playing character. Now, it's still a board game, but you're starting with a different character every time. And you'll have people that are going through and like, okay, I want a fighter, or I definitely want a magic user. Or, you know, you have these people that have like, oh, no, give me the rogue. And they attach themselves to that character archetype. And I think factions work that same way, where it's like, oh, there's a sneaky underhanding faction. Yeah, I want to do that one. You know, and it actually surprises me how rarely there is competition over the same factions in the groups that I play with. Like, people are just so different and like, wow, that's, I would never want to play that faction. But, you know, Josh loves that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So we have, like, let's see, Corey here feels that that really asymmetric games like Vast or Captain Sonar are more trouble to teach than they're worth, but also mentions that good flavor, like the leaders in Through the Ages. So Corey's basically talking about a situation where asymmetry can oftentimes make a game harder to learn because now you have to teach all these different factions. And I think that this goes to levels of extreme. So we're talking Cry Havoc, essentially, you can teach the rules once and then you have some powers in front of you. So you can kind of figure that out. I may need to teach you strategy for each faction so you have a chance, but you know, that's not too bad. Scythe, I'd never worry about having to teach multiple factions. Each faction has a special ability. So I might say, okay, here, read up on your special ability, but it's pretty simple. But Corey mentions a game called Vast, and I've talked about this a couple times in the last few episodes. Vast is almost literally, if you're playing a four-player game, four different games going on at the same time. You have different powers, different abilities, different win conditions. You have different rules in the rule book. Like, every character has two pages of rules that are just for that character and no other character. This is one I have not played. I am so excited to play it, though. Like, I can't wait to just finally get it to the table.
It's a 5K.
Oh, maybe.
It's not a couch. It's a 5K.
On our gaming couch to 5K, this is what you're playing up to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not something that you would bring to, all right, guys, it's your first game night. Here it is. Because it does. It sounds terrible to try to teach, especially to people who've never had an asymmetrical game thrown at them before or aren't expecting it. I can imagine it would be quite the challenge to teach, because I feel like with a game like this, you really have to learn your part yourself. You can't expect someone to teach you your character in a game like that.
I'm actually thinking that this would be an ideal game for several hardcore gamers that all are used to teaching themselves their own rules and saying, okay, everyone, learn this game. And then we'll come together and play it.
I bought it. I can email you the PDF. We'll all read it and come together. You know, send me a text with dibs on which person you want to play. First come, first serve.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. I still can't wait to play it. I love asymmetric games. If there is something that shows asymmetric on the box, I will most likely... If it's fantasy or sci-fi and asymmetric, I've already bought it. Like, without a doubt, I picked it up.
I would say it's not a make or break for me. I like asymmetric games, but it's not something I go out of my way to search out.
I'm almost thinking that I do go... Well, in these days, I go out of my way to look for stuff that is compelling over time. So if I wanted to play it again, I'm playing a different experience again. So that could be story-based, it could be campaign-based, it could be legacy, or it could be asymmetric. But when I play the game again, I want a slightly different experience than the first time I played it, typically.
I think you also like to play the underdog. I've noticed that in asymmetric games where there is a reputation for one of the roles to be less desirable, you want to play that and do well.
Well, because I want to figure out, like, what makes this role different? Like, how do I make this good?
I think it's a very interesting strategy and one that I've seen work really well for you and one that I've seen you just get so frustrated with. I believe with Codex especially, you just sitting at the table like, ah!
But I still enjoy it. I enjoy playing it and trying to overcome that. The thing that actually does bother me is when I see something that looks grossly overpowered and how whatever's going on, something is broken about that particular faction that is making it stronger than everything else. And it's just triumphing over everything. That is when it bothers me the most. And that's usually when I go back to the rules and I'm like, okay, what did we miss here? Because this can't actually be right.
Like when we were playing Cry Havoc and we were scoring wrong. And poor Sydney was just losing and we could not figure it out. And then we realized we had not given her, it was like almost 30 points that she was missing out on.
She was playing the red faction, which is very militaristic. And she was doing her attacking and winning and everything. And we forgot that, oh, you're supposed to give victory points anytime you win a battle. And we discovered about halfway through, but we're like, yeah, but we've all been playing by that rule. So we'll just like play by the rule we've been playing with and not give any victory points. And at the end, we realized like, oh, that's basically Red's primary way of getting victory points.
Yeah.
Can't miss out on that one.
Cannot.
No. So Aaron mentioned, he says, I feel like games like Vast use it as a gimmick. After my plays of Vast, I never feel like trying to play the same role again. Good games make you want to try the same role again and improve. Gimmicks make you want to try it once, then move on. I agree, but I don't think that that... I think that gimmicks make you want to try again and move on, yes, but I don't think that makes it a bad game.
Okay.
So, like, my example of this, Gloomhaven. When I'm playing Gloomhaven, I'm playing a particular character. When I retire that character, I'm never going to go back and play that character again. I'm going to play the next thing that has a completely different way of playing it, different cards, different, you know, builds, different tactics on the board. It's very, very different. Is that a gimmick? Maybe. Maybe not. But Gloomhaven is one of the best games ever made. And it's certainly one where once I've played a particular character, I'm not going to go back and play that character again. And once I play through the entire game, I'm not going to go back and play that game again. Just because the replayability isn't there, I don't think that that makes it a bad game, especially since I rarely ever play the same game twice anyway. So if I get this back to the table more than once, that's a win for me.
I'm not sure about Gloomhaven, and I'm not sure about you.
Okay.
You are very cult of the new. And I think that the gimmick problem to some people is not a problem to you because you are always looking for the next thing. Whereas somebody who's looking for the replayability might not enjoy it as much. Gloomhaven is also a strong campaign. It Yes. is all about moving forward. It is building new scenarios. It's about more scenarios always coming out. So it's not really about the retired characters, it's about moving forward.
I will give you that, but it also leads to a different type of asymmetric game, which is the co-op.
Yes.
So Pandemic wouldn't be nearly as interesting if everyone was just a generalist, which is odd because isn't that how you start out Pandemic Legacy Season 2? But anyway, they vary it really, really quickly after that.
I was going to say, I think that's just for the intro game, maybe even.
Maybe. But... The idea of when you're playing a cooperative game, and not all games are co-op games are asymmetric, but many co-op games are asymmetric. And in those cases, I think the asymmetry can be a lot different because you don't actually have to have a real balance to a co-op game for your asymmetry. There are roles in Pandemic which are far more valuable than others, but combining different roles make those two roles that look subpar really great if you put them together. Now, you play a lot of Pandemic. Like, do you play the same roles? And you play the same roles every time?
Not every time. I have my dream team, and it stops being fun sometimes when you're playing with them because I know how they work so well, I can always win. So, like you, sometimes I pull in characters or roles that I wouldn't necessarily call the most powerful because I want to figure out how to use them and trying to find other combinations of players that it works well with. So, the obvious tie-in together is if you have a scientist, you want to have a researcher, you can just make everything go so much faster. But when you only have one of those roles, I feel like it doesn't work nearly as well as if you have both. So I always try to find little puzzly ways to get around those kind of possible pitfalls.
Yep.
See how I can make those characters work. But I do it as a solo. I don't play with other people very often. And I think if I was playing with other people, I would drive them insane because half the time I get so far into a game, decide I'm losing and go, I want to start again. I'm starting over. Forget it. I'm not going to take the three extra turns that I know I'm going to lose. I'm scrapping it now. Clear the board. I'm done.
That is the advantage of solo gaming. It's like, all right, I'm not going to win this. I give up. I shall start over.
Yep.
Yeah. I used to, I mean, I grew up, my cooperative gaming was solitaire growing up, you know, and you're just like, oh, the ace is just not in my hand. I'm going to wipe the board. I'm going to start over. I've lost this game, you know?
Yep.
So when you're playing with a group of people, it's a lot trickier to do that. I will give you that. But you brought up a good point where when you want to make the puzzle harder for yourself, you change up your starting position, which is hard. Well, nearly impossible to do when you're talking about a typical non-asymmetric game. But in an asymmetric game, like I've mastered Scythe with this particular faction. I want something new. I'm going to try something, a new faction. And all of a sudden the game is like fresh again. And maybe I start losing a few times, but it still feels like it's challenging again. And I'm not just walking all over it.
Well, the interesting part about Scythe is that the player board and the faction change each time. So you really have to know both your faction and your player board. And you've got to be kind of sneaky because I believe as the rule state, you're supposed to randomly assign player boards.
Yes.
So if you are playing the exact same player board and faction each time, you're cheating.
You're cheating. Yes.
You're a cheater.
Yeah. And there are player boards that I really like. I like the board that gives me cheap upgrades because I'm like, I feel like I can feed that in and like take a little advantage of it. But it's surprisingly balanced where even if I have that board, it's not like I'm upgrading any faster than anyone else. So I'm like, oh, well, all right. I guess I'm getting cheap upgrades, but the resource I need is harder to get or something.
Scythe does a very good job of feeling balanced still between all the factions. The way the map is laid out, the way you get different points for different things, the values are a bit different on some stuff. Works out really well. I love it. I want to play again.
So what I think we should talk about next is what you're leading to here, which is you talked about multiple ways of getting points, variable winning conditions for your asymmetry. So basically what we're talking here is a game where you may start out, usually you start out in a different situation, you have your own player factions as well, but you're also starting out with your own way of getting victory. Now the one that pops my head right away, because it was just discontinued by Fantasy Flight, is Android Netrunner. So this is a game where two people construct a deck. And actually, the Star Wars LCG, you can, the same concept. Two players construct a deck, one for one side, one for the other. In Star Wars, it's dark side versus light side. In Android Netrunner, you're either a runner or you're like a corporation trying to defend against the runners. And your victory conditions are very, very different as well. Like when I'm playing Star Wars, if I'm on the light side, I'm attempting to basically take out the Death Star. And the Death Star is just trying to knock me down three times and they win. Another asymmetric game, actually, if we go Star Wars, every Star Wars game is asymmetric with yeah, variable win conditions. But like Star Wars Rebellion is the same way. We have different win conditions along with our different starting conditions. And that's when it gets really, really interesting. And I'm talking about new games right now, but I think that these types of games are potentially the earliest of asymmetric games. Because like miniature wargaming, Axis and Allies, those types of games were like, all right, we're going to simulate a particular battle. And I guess the goal there is still to win, but not necessarily. Maybe you need to hold the line for a certain amount of time, or you need to bust through and destroy a particular outpost or something like that. So those games are actually really cool to me as well. I really like variable win conditions, which Vast also has because all of those are different. I'm going to love this game, Vast, I hope. Otherwise, once I play it, I will let everyone know how I actually feel about Vast and whether or not the hype lives up to what I hope it is.
Do you think Dead of Winter falls into this category?
Yes, no.
Right?
It falls into the category of we each have a unique ability, right? Because each character has a unique ability they can use.
Yes. And they also have their own win condition.
Yes.
But there's also a collective win condition.
Yes. I'm going to give it a mild asymmetric. It's almost on the Terraforming Mars level of asymmetric.
Okay.
So, because you do have your own win condition and you have a special power, which are two, but in those cases, it's also very minor, right? Because in order to win, you need to meet your win condition and you need to win the overall game. So there is that. I'm going to say it's semi-asymmetric.
I would say it is asymmetric, but I wouldn't call it an asymmetric game.
I don't know, have any idea what you're talking about.
Within the game, there is asymmetry, but the game is not for the asymmetry.
Yes.
I'll like some that. Games, without the asymmetry, there would be no game.
Right.
Whereas this, you can take away the asymmetry and still have game left.
Yes. Although that is the case for a lot of games. Like Terraforming Mars, we talked about, like you can take that away. But again, I don't think Terraforming Mars...
They kind of go in that mild category.
I'm going to say it's a semi. I agree that you could you could just genericize all of the characters and the game would play as fun.
Like a survival game.
Yeah. You just wouldn't feel as attached to your character. You wouldn't feel as differentiated from your character. You know, actually, Pandemic, you could do the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Pandemic is weighted that you have special abilities, but if you were to just get rid of all of the special abilities and try to play Pandemic, you could do it. It would be really, really hard, but you could do it and you could play it as a normal game. You just wouldn't care as much. Mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't, as if four people were playing it and you all had the same exact everything, you're all like, okay, I move my pawn here and I take these two actions.
There's no like, oh, no, we have to wait for Chris's turn. Exactly. Chris can do this so much better. And now on Spencer's turn, we have to do this because Josh can do the other thing the best. And everyone feels like they have something unique to contribute. Whereas if you're all exactly the same, it's just, well, there. It also really would play into the alpha player because the alpha player, there's literally a best move for each round.
Yeah. And there's nothing for me to rely on. Like if I'm the dispatcher, hey, I can do this. And I feel like I'm involved because this is something I can do and no one else can do.
Yes.
And without that, you lose it. So this is a case where I think asymmetry is an absolute must. Like you have to have it in those kinds of games. Otherwise, the game just changes. It breaks down into the... It's kind of interesting, but not really. I want to mention something that Michael said on BGG. He mentions Through the Ages as being asymmetric. I've just recently started playing Through the Ages on the iPad, and you can get it on the iPhone as well. This is a super... I don't want to say super heavy Euro, but it is a pretty heavy Euro. It's also one of the top rated games on BGG. And the first couple times I played it, I'm like, I have no idea what's going on, but now I love it. This is a game where everyone starts out the same. There's a slight resource change and like an action economy where the first player starts with less actions than the second player. I don't consider that asymmetric in any way. I consider that just a way of taking away first player advantage. But as you play, you will take different leaders that then give your side powers and factions. You'll get wonders that give your side different powers. You'll get different cards and abilities that you'll build up. And it becomes very asymmetrical by the end. Every civilization is different by the end. I'm going to call not an asymmetrical game, though. It is it's a civ building game is what it literally is. But that description goes along with any kind of you're building a tableau. So at the end of the game, what you can do is very different from everyone else. That is not asymmetric if you all start with the same starting position.
It goes back to the risk. Are you picking countries or are you dealt countries? When you are picking countries, it is not asymmetric because everyone is given the same options with the exception of the first player advantage.
And that, I think, really is a differentiator with asymmetrical asymmetrical games versus games that end up being very different once you've completed the game. Both of those games I like because, you know, that engine building, that tableau building, that civ building, whatever you want to call it, that's a really fun thing to do during a game. But it's still, if you're starting from an equal position, it is, you could rebuild that same thing every single time if you wanted to, or maybe not. Some games, like, You know, I got Da Vinci for my leader in one game and I was able to build a strategy around him. But in the next game, someone else took that card or it never came up or whatever the case. So I had to build a different strategy. So that's where the game itself is allowing me these options. Where in an asymmetric game, I can start with the same thing every time if I want to.
Yes.
All right. What else do we have that we haven't talked about?
Do you have any thoughts that you feel like you haven't shared?
Well, we haven't talked about deck building games. Deck building games, I think, are also very asymmetric, but they solve the asymmetric problem by giving everybody an equal playing field for what you are building in your deck.
Are we talking deck building or are we talking collectible?
Ugh. Good call. Good call. Collectible. So deck construction games. We'll use that. So Magic, Pokemon, anything else that you might need to build a deck for at the beginning. The Legend of the Five Rings, LCG. Those types of competitive games.
Well, some even traditional deck builders where there's basic cards that everyone always has access to, I think also can fall into this category where there's some special cards, but some cards you can always pick up and everyone has the same choices.
So, well, if we look at deck building games, as we would define Dominion, Star Realms, those types of games, typically those are not asymmetric simply because you're all starting with the same starting 10 cards.
Yeah.
Now, Hero Realms does add a tiny bit of asymmetry with their character packs, which is why I love Hero Realms way more than Star Realms, even though Star Realms is vastly more popular. Because in Hero Realms, I can start with the Wizard starting pack or the Thief starting pack or the Fighter starting pack or whatever. And I feel like it's like, all right, I have this special ability in front of me that I can always use. I have these special cards that nobody else has. It feels asymmetric to me. I can't think of any other deck builder off the top of my head that feels asymmetric to me. I guess some of the legendary games, which are deck builders, you may have characters that you start with that give you like a special starting pack.
Firefly,
yep.
I believe, definitely has characters that especially can affect how you play different scenarios.
Exactly. So some of those are. And actually, I really like those particular things. Again, I would much rather play Legendary Firefly or Alien or Marvel or pick your flavor and be able to like attach myself to a particular character, even though I still have to build my deck up to be more and more like that character. I still feel like I'm attached to someone there. So I just think I'm just going on about how much I like asymmetric games. But back to...
I distracted you from your collectible.
I know. Back to collectibles. I think I'm convincing myself that collectible games are not asymmetric. And the reason I'm saying this is because when I think of a deck construction game, the game starts when you're constructing the deck. You play the game with very, very different decks. So if you're going to say the game starts when you sit down and you draw your opening hand, fine. If that's all you're looking at, that's an asymmetric game. But before you sit down, everybody has the option of choosing any deck they want. But they can all choose the same deck if they choose to. So it's the choices you make in the meta game that actually affect the actual competition game. But I don't see this as an asymmetric game if you take the whole thing into consideration.
The only thing is the money. You have to spend the money to get all the cards to have access to everything, unless you're playing by certain rules, certain exceptions.
I will give you the money is a thing, which is kind of sad. It's like it's asymmetric as long as you can afford it to be asymmetric.
Yeah.
Now,
and otherwise, there's luck.
Yeah. Well, also, you have drafting. So like Magic tournaments,
yes.
Magic drafts, you sit down, you get, three booster packs and all the lands you can use and whatever. So you're creating a deck out of that. I still don't know if that's asymmetric though, because you're drawing a hand of cards to start with. It is literally a drafting game, but just because you happen to open a pack that has something good in it, you are starting with a different hand, but you're starting with a different hand in any game where you're drawing cards. It's like saying poker's an asymmetric game. It isn't.
I think luck and variability are not the same as asymmetry.
we're talking input randomness here. Here's some cards. This is input into what you're going to make as a decision, and you're trying to make the best decision. It's not before the game starts, here's what you have, and you're going to be able to work with this. So yeah, I'm going to, and people can disagree with me, but I'm going to say that
I'm
Magic
looking
is not
forward
asymmetric.
To the feedback on this.
We're going to be splitting hairs of definition. It's my favorite kind. Oh, one other thing I did want to bring up, role-playing games. You're giving me a face they can't see, but the face she's giving me looks a lot like that. What are you talking about?
The skeptical face.
It is a skeptical face, but it sort of goes along with the cooperative games. In a role-playing game, that is a 100% asymmetrical game, because when you sit down and start, every one of you is starting with a different character with different abilities and different things. Now, you get to create that, so I'm kind of breaking my own rule when I say that it's not asymmetrical, but it is. Darn it, I'm sticking with this. The definition of my deck construction games versus my role-playing games. Role-playing games are asymmetric, deck construction, I don't know, I'm convincing myself otherwise. This is a hard topic.
It is. We wrapped up off topic so quickly and have still managed to talk for longer than I thought we would.
I can still go on. But I still think role-playing games are asymmetric. I think they're cooperative asymmetric games, and I'm going to stick with that.
They're so different than any other kind of game. They are their own category to me. I think you're mixing apples and oranges there, but there is definitely asymmetry.
But I'm there. Mixing asymmetric apples with asymmetric oranges.
Fair. I'll give it to you.
All right. I think we've done this topic some murdering, and I don't know. What I've convinced myself of is I don't ever want to not play an asymmetric game again, but I think I have to, because there's a lot of good games that are not necessarily asymmetric. And some of my favorite games are really kind of like these tactical, like start on the same, like Homeworlds. I still love Homeworlds. It's a very, you know, abstract game. Abstract games tend not to be asymmetrical in any way, shape, or form. I like head-to-head games. I like, you know, that kind of thing as well. But I'm going to have to go through my top 10. We need to do a top 10 games. We haven't done that.
We do need
to
do a revisit. Yeah. So much new stuff.
Yeah. Because I'm wondering if I go through my top 10 list, how many of them would actually be asymmetric versus more of just your standard game setup? Because right now I can't think of any game that's not asymmetric in my head anymore. All right. Top 10. We'll do that. Maybe we'll do that as our episode 100. Maybe we've just decided on what episode 100 is going to be.
Maybe. We'll have to run it by Josh.
I think that might work. Yeah, because Josh is going to be part of that. I have commitments.
We will all be together.
It'll be an epic thing. And that one, it's going to be a long episode. But if we did a long episode, I like this. All right. This is how ideas happen. They just go. Okay. I'm going to end this. I'm going to end the misery. Thank you for listening. Seriously, if you got this far, thank you. You can follow us on Facebook @ Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. You can follow us at Twitter @ Tabletop Game TLK. You can follow me @ Game Master Chris. Leave us a review.
I'm back on Twitter. I have a new Twitter handle just for podcast related business. I'm Lawful Good Mom.
Waffle Good Mom.
Lawful good.
Oh, lawful, like as in the paladin.
Yeah. Lawful, I'm a lawful good mom.
I like that. That is awesome. So,
and I didn't get on Twitter just because I thought of a handle I liked.
But that's a good, I'm surprised that that's not already taken.
Right?
Wow. No, I'm impressed with that. Wait, have you followed me? I haven't gotten a lawful good mom follow yet.
I think I did.
Oh, I'll have to double check. You should follow me. I'm like really popular.
I have like 2 followers already, so yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not that popular. But I have 1. It's awesome. All right. Follow me and we'll get you all kinds of followers.
All right.
Yes, iTunes reviews, those are cool. Patreon, that's cool too. And now Kitty's just gonna read the rest of this.
All right. Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, The SGC, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stefan Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Kyle Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Schwartzel, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamai, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey, Ann Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate, Faz Flintham, Sean Peck, Toby Kraft, Eric Slander, Adam Kriblas, Mike Smith, Christine Meyer, Trevor Davis, Wesley Traylor, and Tim Vernig. Until next week, when we talk about non-gamer significant others, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.
You're just pointing at me. I wasn't expecting this. I've got nothing to say.
You have nothing to say?
I'm very tired.
Every week, I come out here and I come up with something, and one week, I want you to come up with nothing. Something. Something, you got nothing.
So many times that you say something, I had something great to say, and then you point at me and I'm not ready.
All right, well, I'm just going to leave this in, and this counts.